And from the KTO newsroom, I'm Jamie Deep. The comments period for the first phase of construction of a new ferry terminal north of Juneau ends this Friday. The state's proposed Cascade Point Ferry Terminal is slated to be located just beyond where the road ends in Juneau on land owned by Goldbelt Incorporated, a local Alaska Native corporation. The Department of Transportation and Public Facilities began soliciting public comments for the first phase of construction late last month. Shannon McCarthy, the DOT's communications director, says the current public comment period is only for the first stage of the project and is not the end of public input for the overall project. She says a no-build option is still on the table, even though DOT has already signed a $28 million contract for the first phase of construction.
We have been talking about this project for a long time, and it really does fit in with kind of the philosophy of shorter ferry trips, longer roads, so that we can really have that operational efficiency.
The first stage of the project is to develop the access road to the site and a staging area for future construction. DOT says construction could begin as soon as next summer. The Cascade Point Terminal would be Juneau's second ferry terminal, located about 30 miles north of Juneau's already existing terminal in Auk Bay. Under the Dunleavy administration, the state has been pushing for the project for several years, saying it would benefit travelers by reducing operating costs and travel time between Juneau, Haines, and Skagway. A Canadian mining company also wants to develop an off-site ore terminal at the site in partnership with Goldbelt. The DOT recently released an economic analysis of the terminal that portrayed it as having more pros than cons, despite criticism from regional officials, conservation groups, and members of the Alaska Marine Highway Oversight Board. Haines and Skagway have also openly opposed the project. The Juneau Assembly hasn't taken a stance on it. Written and emailed comments must be submitted by this Friday. McCarthy says the public comment period for the second stage of the project is slated to open. For the first time, Juneau's famous Mendenhall Glacier is not touching Mendenhall Lake, which was hidden beneath a thick sheet of glacial ice only a couple hundred years ago. Scientists say that means the glacier has entered a new phase of its retreat. KTOO's Alex Solomon has the story.
Jason Amundson is a glaciologist at the University of Alaska Southeast who's been studying the Mendenhall Glacier for years. He says it's the symbol of Juneau.
And there's several glaciers around, but when someone says the glacier, they're definitely talking about Mendenhall.
Juneau's City Hall features a panoramic image of the glacier. It's the most striking part of the landscape that travelers see when they fly into Juneau International Airport. It's the capital city's number one tourist attraction, with more than 700,000 visitors each year. For generations, the glacier fanned out across the lake that it carved out, but it's been rapidly retreating out of the lake over the past two decades. Now, scientists say it's separated from the water completely. Amundson flew over the scene in a helicopter about 2 weeks ago.
That was the first time I had really thought, oh, it doesn't look like it's touching the lake anymore. And then there were some photos I saw on Facebook that confirmed it.
But he says the ice and water will probably touch again for brief periods over the coming seasons. Rainfall and snowmelt could cause the lake level to rise up enough to meet the ice. And the ice still pushes toward the lake a fraction in the winter when gravity pulls on the added mass of the snowpack. Aaron Hood is an environmental scientist at the University of Alaska Southeast. He says that despite these expected seasonal meetups, the Mendenhall is functionally no longer a lake-terminating glacier.
It's clear there's a lot of shallow sediments through there that it's kind of sitting on or even perched up above. And so there's just not much chance at this point that it would really have meaningful interactions with the lake anymore.
Climate change has accelerated the glacier's retreat. Between 1941 and 2020, the local mean temperature rose by 2.5 degrees Fahrenheit. In recent years, Amundson says the ice on the lake quickly disappeared.
There was pretty rapid retreat that occurred because there was this shallow, pretty thin area of the glacier that was in the lake, and that broke apart, like where the ice caves used to be.
According to a report by Hood, Amundson and their colleagues shared with KTOO, the glacier retreated fastest between 2007 and 2011, losing roughly a football field per year. That's because icebergs were calving off at a high rate as the glacier's terminus moved through the deepest part of Mendenhall Lake. Now that the ice isn't touching the water, Amundson says the Mendenhall's retreat could slow down. In the report, the researchers found that parts of the glacier that terminated on rock retreated substantially slower than parts that terminated on the lake.
And so once you get out of the lake, that it's harder for the glacier to retreat as quickly as it has over the last 5, 10, 15 years.
But the glacier is still retreating. Using ice-penetrating radar, the researchers are currently trying to predict when it will reach another lake of unknown size and shape that's currently hidden beneath the ice. And one day, in the not-so-distant future, they say the symbol of Juno will disappear from the vantage point of the U.S. Forest Service Visitor Center that was built to feature a close-up scenic vista of the ice. Now, it's more than a mile and a half away. Hood says he thinks that will happen sometime around 2050. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
And as Thanksgiving approaches, some Southeast residents are already putting up Christmas decorations. The centerpiece, of course, is the tree. The U.S. Forest Service allows each household to cut down one Christmas tree from the Tongass National Forest per year. Julia Spofford is the assistant director at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. Permits aren't required, but she says to follow a few key guidelines that aim to protect ecosystems.
We don't want to do any trees within, 330 feet of bald eagle nests or 100 feet of salmon streams or 100 feet of roads or trails.
She says to only take a tree that's 7 inches in diameter or smaller and to cut as low to the ground as possible.
We ask that you avoid muskeg as well, just because the regeneration in those areas is difficult for trees to establish.
Some helpful tools to bring are a handsaw, sled, cord to wrap the tree, and a tape measure. Tree harvesters will see a lot of hemlock and Sitka spruce. Spofford explains the difference in terms of Christmas tree quality.
Hemlocks are really soft, but they also have kind of very flexible branches. So if you've got a lot of heavy ornaments, might not be a good choice. But if you're likely to brush into your tree a lot or have small kids, it might be a nicer option since it's softer versus the Sitka spruce. Spruce has those spikier needles, but often have a little more conical of shape.
And Spofford said it's important to check a Forest Service map. She says people can find Christmas trees by hiking out on the trails, but there are also a couple of accessible spots just off of Juneau's road system. The first is along Glacier Highway between mileposts 29 and 33. The second is up Fish Creek Road towards Eagle Crest Ski Area. The Mendenhall Glacier Recreation Area, Auk Recreation Area, and Lena Beach are off limits. The city and borough of Juneau also allows Christmas tree harvest on designated areas of city-owned land, including off of North Douglas Highway near Fritz Cove and False Outer Point, and off of Glacier Highway near Bridget Cove. The city's regulations differ slightly from the Forest Service policy. Harvesters must still avoid muskeg and cut the tree at its base, but also discarded branches must be scattered and trees must be cut more than 50 feet from a hiking trail and more than 25 feet from any body of water. Tlingit and Dena'ina writer and playwright Vera Starbird recently clinched her fourth Emmy nomination for the PBS show Molly of Denali. The Alaska State Writer Laureate wrote an episode about the show's titular character navigating the complex history of Thanksgiving to create a celebration that honors Alaska Native culture. KTOO spoke with Starbird about the nomination and writing the episode. Vera Starbird was nominated for Outstanding Writing for a Preschool Animated Series for an episode of Molly called Thanksgiving.
Hey everyone, it's me, Molly!
The episode aired last year and follows Molly and her friends as they learn why some Alaska Native people don't celebrate Thanksgiving. Starbird says she'd been pitching the episode early in the show's creation.
It was sort of a let me at it. I want to tell a Thanksgiving episode from a Native perspective. I don't personally celebrate Thanksgiving.
In the episode, Grandpa Nat, Molly's grandfather, talks about why he doesn't celebrate Thanksgiving and calls it a time of mourning. He spoke about, quote, new people who outlawed many indigenous traditions and destroyed different cultural pieces.
Oh, sometimes people do awful things when they don't understand other people's way of life.
Starbird says the scene explaining that traditions were outlawed was the core of what she wanted to convey with the story.
It wasn't something lost. Like, I think when we hear about it, it's as if we forgot it, that Native people just sort of blacked it out for some reason. It was taken from us. It was very forcefully and violently taken from us. And that is difficult to do in a show like Molly when you're trying to, talk to four-year-olds and eight-year-olds, and you don't want to re-traumatize people with it, but you do want to tell the truth, and you want to tell the full truth that really hasn't been told to us in our history books.
In the rest of the episode, Molly and her friends host a community-wide celebration that brings back Alaska Native traditions, including time to mourn. In the episode, Molly asks her Auntie Myrna about it.
How can you be sad and celebrate?
When we remember our ancestors together and talk about what was lost, we know we're not alone. Then we can all heal together and celebrate what we have.
Camino grieving through ceremonies like a Tlingit Kuik, also known as a potlatch, was also outlawed. Starbart says she wanted to bring that into the show.
I don't see many people talking about communal grief outside of Native communities. I think Native communities, we talk about it a lot, and I don't see that many other places. This, to me, was a gift the Native people could give the rest of the world. This is how you grieve together, and it's a good thing to grieve together.
Starbart says this fourth nomination means a lot to her, but it's a bittersweet moment. She says she thought about her dad when she was nominated again. She brought her mom and sister to the Emmy ceremony for her previous nomination and wished she could have brought her dad as well.
He had said, oh, but next time you're nominated, I'll go to that one. And he passed away a couple months ago, and that was definitely on my mind. Just that he was so confident that I would be nominated again for my work, but also sad that it can't be there.
The winner of the Outstanding Writing for a Preschool Animated Series will be announced at the Children's and Family Emmy Awards ceremony in March. In Juneau, I'm Jamie Deep. And the weather in Juneau right now is 29 degrees and partly cloudy. Tonight, the weather's expected to be mostly clear with a low around 26 and a northeast wind of 15 to 20 miles per hour. For Thanksgiving Day, the weather is expected to stay on the chilly end, but sun is expected with a high of 34 and a low of 27. Going into the weekend, there's a chance of rain and snow on Friday, and that continues into the weekend, with highs in the upper 30s and lower 40s, and lows in the lower to mid 30s. This is KTOO. Thanks for tuning in.